This is episode 309 of That Shakespeare Life. Our episode today comes equipped with detailed show notes that includes visual elements we aren't able to share on the audio. This includes images, paintings, diagrams, and more. You can access all these bonuses at the Patreon link and the show notes for today's episode, or you can sign up at patreon.com/thatshakespearelife. Stay tuned after the episode, and I'll share even more details.
Hi. I'm Neil Handley, curator of the British Optical Association Museum at the College of Optometrists in London. And another great method for studying the life of William Shakespeare includes listening to this. It's That Shakespeare Life with my friend Cassidy Cash.
The reason they're together is to fill a gap in a timber frame building. So between the big black timbers, you see them as black, you know, what goes in between? So need to fill it in. So I think 6,000 years ago, they thought, well, let's start with filling it in with twigs.
Welcome to That Shakespeare Life with Cassidy Cash. Cassidy believes that if you desire to successfully learn or perform Shakespeare's plays, then understanding the real life and history of William Shakespeare himself is a must. That Shakespeare Life is the podcast that helps you go beyond the curtain of some of Shakespeare's most iconic works and explore the world of early modern England as Shakespeare would have lived it, learning from the writers, historians, and performers who know it best. And now, here's Cassidy.
For centuries, the construction method of wattle and daub has been used to construct all kinds of buildings, from houses to guild halls and more. For Shakespeare's lifetime, the Tudor style of house became famous for this form of construction because Tudor homes featured exposed beams held together in the wattle and daub style. For the uninitiated, however, you may not know what constitutes a wattle or a daub, or how this method of construction was accomplished. Here today to answer these questions and share with us not only how the process was completed for Shakespeare's lifetime, but what the methods modern preservationists are using when recreating this method on conservation projects that try to save old buildings from ruin. Please welcome our guest and expert in wattle and daub, Dr. Tony Graham. Dr. Tony Graham holds a Master of Science in the Conservation of Historic Buildings from the University of Bath, writing his thesis on historic preservation with wattle and daub. Tony and his wife founded Tony Graham and Company, a business specializing in the analysis and repair of historic buildings. You can find links to Tony's business, his publications, and more about his company and wattle and daub in the show notes for today's episode. Hello, Tony. Welcome to That Shakespeare Life.
Hi, Cassidy. Thanks for having me on.
I suppose we should start with the basics here, Tony. Just a brief definition, if you would, please. What is a wattle and what is a daub?
Yeah. So it's daub. It's a bit, yeah. So
daub. Okay, I will say it correctly.
In Shakespearean English, maybe. In British English, it's daub. So
daub.
Yeah, what is a wattle? What is a daub? So they go together. The reason they're together is to fill a gap in a timber frame building. So between the big black timbers, you see them as black, you know, what goes in between? So need to fill it in. So I think 6,000 years ago, they thought, well, let's start with filling it in with twigs. And, you know, maybe over 1,000 years, let's weave those because that's more sturdy. So that's a wattle, a woven set of twigs. But yeah, there's still air that can pass through that. Well, that's not, you know, that's a bit windy. So, okay, let's shove something on top of that. We've got some mud down here. Let's push that into the wattles. Yeah, that's better. That's much more air resistant. That's even warmer. So let's do that. So that's some wattle and we're daubing on some clayey soil. So we've got wattle and daub and now we've filled in our walls.
I have to think linguistically, there's an association between that and the word dab. When we say just put a dab of this on there, I assume there's an association there.
I think it's believed that it's come from the French. So the word daubeur? I don't know how you pronounce it in French, but it is basically to paint on, to place on. So yeah, Very much so. So, yeah.
Now, as you mentioned, this method of construction has existed for centuries, certainly centuries before Shakespeare. But what makes the Tudor period so distinctively associated with Waddle and Daub?
So I'd say it isn't.
All right, then.
Yeah. So let's turn that around. Waddle and Daub has been around, you know, many generations before Shakespeare's around, and 100 or 200 years after. So it was before, during and after his lifetime. But it is very typical of the buildings during Shakespeare's life. Yeah, they would have been all around him, everywhere. So from your humble true cottage, cottages that don't exist, because the word cottage is really like what you'd see in a shanty town. So, yeah, he might have passed those on the outskirts of a village. He would have seen larger houses with wattle and daub, and he would have been born and lived in, well, he was born in a house with wattle and daub, that's still standing, and he would have lived in houses with wattle and daub, and he would have performed in theatres with wattle and daub. So everywhere around him, yeah. And it was just so common that nobody would have really have taken any notice of it. Yeah.
Were all buildings constructed this way across the board during this period, or were there other architectural options and this one was just popular?
Yeah, this was very common in areas with a lot of timber. And still in the 16th century, a lot of England still did have a good amount of timber. But other areas, stone was very common. And yeah, since Tudor times, so just a bit before Shakespeare was around, brought in with more, it was really Henry VIII, brought in brick. So those areas that no longer had a lot of timber, brick was the new material. So yeah, a lot of brick, a lot of stone, but still very much a lot of timber as well. And with timber, nearly always wattle and daub.
Now, was wattle and daub construction well insulating for a house? It's very cold in England, certainly, more so than here where I live, definitely. But would there also need to be interior insulation added to a home? So after you built the wattle and daub, did you have to do something else? Or was that it? That was the frame and the insulation altogether?
For most people, that's all you got. You got your timber frame and your wattle and daub and nothing else. So, I mean, maybe the royal palaces and the very wealthy might have tapestries, I think, on the walls. But that was more about showing somebody's wealth. So basically, in terms of insulation, no, it was just timber frame, wattle and daub, open fires, curtains around the bed, and those sorts of things. But no, the walls themselves, no, it's just wattle and daub. And of course, we've still got houses like that in England, and I'm lucky enough to live in one. So, yeah.
So how does daub compare with modern day concrete?
Yeah. So concrete obviously has a lot more uses. And yes, even walls of houses are being built with concrete. Concrete in a way is a lot more versatile. It's a bit like comparing chalk and cheese, though. So wattle and daub has that very specific purpose of filling in gaps in the middle of a timber frame, whereas, as you know, concrete, so many different purposes. But yeah, so you can build a wall of concrete.
So daub wouldn't have been used for things like to pave a road or to construct a sculpture. There weren't other uses for this. It was just for houses.
In Shakespeare's time, no. I think wattle and daub was really about timber frame buildings. Whereas, yeah, concrete these days, everything including walls. But one good thing about then was, you know, daub is just pulled out of the ground, very low energy. Whereas I think these days we also have to think about concrete and the energy it uses and our climate crisis. So it's very energy intensive. But yeah, not a problem back in the 16th century. Yeah.
As I understand it, Waddle and Daub style could vary pretty significantly from region to region wherever the construction was going on, because the construction method of Waddle and Daub relied pretty heavily on local ingredients, like whatever your trees were or whatever mud that you had there. I was wondering if you could explain for us what panel construction is associated with Waddle and Daub, and what kind of panels were used to create this kind of building. So what was the process and how did it vary depending on where you were?
Well, the evidence is there were common methods shared, generally shared. So the principle is pretty much shared across the nation, which is those you need some stiffer timbers to start with. And you've got thinner timbers which are forming a wattle. And pretty much anything else goes. So there's so much variety, as you said, what's available locally. So in that, if you imagine that square gap in your timber frame, what are you going to put the wattles in? Oh, well, let's put some vertical fixed sticks in first of all. If there's a lot of oak around, brilliant, that's really ideal. Let's put in what are called staves. So some extra vertical, thinner bits of timber, that they are staves. And then you need something that's malleable, a bendable type of wood. A lot of wood will just snap. So, what's flexible? Oh, let's go and ask that coppicer in the woodland, his underwood, like the surname, the underwood, if you coppice some of that, that willow is nice and flexible, we'll use some of that. Now, that willow's a bit thick. I can't bend that around these staves. Let's split it in half. Any coppicer could do that. They just split it within 2 seconds, and now you've got two halves of that willow or hazel, whatever's available locally, quite often hazel, actually. And that's much easier to weave. So, yeah, fill the panel with lots of these riven hazel or willow and build that up. That was very common to a square panel. And then in, let's see, Shakespeare living in a higher class type of building, lots of timber. So this is where they're called close studded. So it's about 50-50. What we see is black, as in structural timbers, and then there's only a thin gap in between. Well, you can't get staves and you can't get wattles in that narrow gap, which are, I don't know, so wide. So you use a different technique, which is basically just two staves, two bits of wood, and we'll just attach straight bits of lath being also riven, so but thinner. You see that is still in early 20th century ceilings and walls where you plaster onto them. So that would be a slightly different method. So in very high class buildings, not woven perhaps, but flat laths. Same thing though, you can daub that, fill it up with clayey earth, same result, but slightly different internal technique. But most houses were these sort of quite large panels, so high, so wide. What is that? Let's call it a metre. So a metre high, metre wide. And you would normally weave the wattles on that. So probably more.
Would you construct it first and then kind of lean it up to fasten it in place, or do you build it in place?
Build it in situ. Yeah. Okay. Those staves that I talked about, the vertical bits, would go in a groove within the timber frame. So holes in the top, groove in the bottom. And so you basically wedge them in. Yeah. So, generally 16th century, not really much use of nails, certainly no screws, no spikes or anything. So much easier just to wedge it in.
Now, in your paper about Waddell and Daub reconstruction, where you're recreating this method for modern conservation to try and preserve some of the surviving Waddell and Daub buildings. You mentioned something called a withy as a type of tie. How are these used in the construction of Waddell and Daub buildings? Are they a replacement for things like nails?
No, well, I should have said earlier, a withy is this stick of hazel or willow. That is a withy.
Oh, so that you're wrapping around to make
the stick that's making up the wattle, but the bendy one, the horizontal usually.
The flexible one, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, that's the hazel or the wattle that you're splitting, then is a withy.
So who is it that was doing this kind of construction? Would this have been done by the homeowner, or what does the historical record tell us about who it was that had the skill to put all this together into a house? Because despite how basic it sounds to put up some wood and slap some, you know, mud and water in there, I don't think I could do it successfully. So somebody had to be studied in this. Who was it that knew how to do it?
Well, they were the daubers, like the French word. So daubers, yeah, it was an artisan skill. So I believe there is evidence that a dauber would either be in the village, in the town, or perhaps, you know, regional. And they would be the artisan plasterers, but they would start with the daubing. Yeah.
Do we know of anybody that was particularly famous or sought out to do this the way we think of, you know, architects today?
No, I believe they were not at the architect level. So they were just unnamed artisans that they would be hired. There's plenty of manorial court rolls that talk about different labourers, such as plasterers and daubers, but they're not named. They're not significant enough. Yeah.
So just kind of along the line of blacksmiths or the town doctor, we may or may not know.
Yeah, exactly. The thatcher.
Who the person is, but there was one. Yeah.
Yeah. And a thatcher. Okay. They're not named. I think, not so sure about this, but I think if the true cottage, that, you know, that sort of shanty town building for peasants, I think the homeowner would have been left to do it themselves.
Yeah. To do it themselves.
Yeah.
Would the thatcher and the dauber work together, or were these the same person?
Not the same person.
Okay.
I believe, but they've got a common need for what the dauber calls withies, and the thatcher calls, in this part of the country, spars. It's got another name elsewhere, but locally here in west of England, spars. So again, very bendable bits of wood that they keep the thatch in with. Yeah, it's all underwood. It's all coppice wood, yeah? From Mr. Underwood.
Well, obviously, Tony Graham's publications on Waddell and Daub, and certainly his work on conservation of this construction method, is a great place to begin when you want to learn more. But Tony, I'd like to ask you to share with us, what would you suggest if we're interested in learning more about Waddell and Daub construction and how it was done and exploring this further? Where should we begin?
Yeah, there's an excellent book by a woman in England called Paula Sunshine. It's a great name, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
Paula Sunshine. I think the book's just called Waddell and Daub. It's not expensive. It's very small. And it just explains it in the same way as we've been talking about it, but obviously with illustrations, and, you know, it's easier to understand. Definitely that one. I think that would also help one conserve, as in, I think in the US, preserve, different words, same meaning, to preserve what is there already. Another source is, well, okay, so that was my paper. There's a book edited by Michael Forsyth that I think has my chapter in it. That's quite good, about conservation of materials. And there is a book generally, I think, was it Brunskill? Ronald W. Brunskill, I think, quite a well-known author. And his book, I forget the title, but very good about the approaches of looking after historic fabric. Yeah.
These are excellent resources. We'll chase down the title of Ronald Brunskill's book, and we will place links to these recommended resources, along with direct links to Tony's work and his organization that works to conserve Wattle and Daub buildings, all packed into the show notes today. So stay tuned for the URL on where to find those. Now, Tony, we ask everyone this next question here at That Shakespeare Life, and that's, what's the one book you would take with you on a deserted island? My friends in England tell me I'm supposed to allow you the complete works of Shakespeare and a copy of the Bible, so your choice would be an addition to those.
Right. My book has to be on the theory of general relativity. Very different. So if I'm on a desert island, I've got plenty of time. I started the book years ago and it's got worked exercises, etc. It's an amazing theory. You know, obviously came many hundred years after Shakespeare, but possibly by somebody who was just as good at his job. So a guy called Einstein. And I would love to understand that. So I would take that book, and it would take me years to get to the end. Brilliant. That would fill my time, wouldn't it?
I think that would be an excellent use of your time, sure. Assuming one or two reads through would have you understanding it, and then you spend the rest of the time pondering what to do with your newfound knowledge there.
Yeah, true.
Well, what's next for you? What are you working on now that you're excited about?
So in terms of building conservation, I'm doing less work, but I'm still living in a house with a lot of Wattle and Daub panels. So I'm very pleased I can conserve those myself. But I've got various interests. Electronics keeps me busy as well and pays for the lime putty and the quick lime that I need for repairing the house. So yeah, electronics. And then the other thing that keeps me busy is worrying and trying to get change in terms of climate action. So yeah, I'm quite involved in that space as well. Those three things all put together, that's what fills my time.
Very exciting stuff coming from Dr. Tony Graham. Thank you so much for being here this week and taking us through the history of Wattle and Daub and understanding how this construction method works, and what a fun look at an iconic part of Shakespeare's lifetime. It's been fun talking with you.
Thanks very much, Cassidy.
If you would like to check out some of the resources that Tony mentions today, as well as find links to Tony's restoration business and more information on Wattle and Daub, be sure to stop by the show notes page at CassidyCash.com/episode309. That's CassidyCash.com/EP309. And if you didn't know already, there's an active comment section in the bottom of our show notes, and guests are notified of all the questions and comments that listeners put there. So if you'd like to add your voice to our conversation today, that's a great place to let us know what you think about Wattle and Daub. Remember that for patrons of That Shakespeare Life, the show notes expand to reveal more detailed history about our topic. There's always several visual elements I find while researching each episode, including images, primary documents, paintings, woodcuts, all kinds of things that simply aren't able to be shared on the audio of our show. I pack all of these extras into the detailed show notes and make them available for listeners who support our show as a patron. If you'd like to see this bonus content for today's show, you can sign up to be a patron right on the show notes page or at patreon.com/thatshakespearelife. Patrons help support our show, and they get to interact with our show directly with sneak peeks at upcoming episodes and the opportunity to submit your own questions that you'd like asked during an interview. There's a library of over 150 additional episodes of our show and tons of other insider history extras. Find them all and join us today at patreon.com/thatshakespearelife. That Shakespeare Life is researched and produced by me, Cassidy Cash. Our audio engineer is Gary Mayholm. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening. I'm Cassidy Cash, and I hope you learned something new about the Bard. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to That Shakespeare Life. As always, the best conversations happen after the episode over at CassidyCash.com. Become a part of a vibrant Shakespeare conversation by adding your voice over at the website. Until next time, remember, when you want to know William Shakespeare, you have to go behind the curtain and into That Shakespeare Life.